you actually say remote work can't work. Look, we tried it. It doesn't work. We're going to go back to an office, when in reality, your experiment is faulty because you never actually tried to do remote work. You didn't actually embrace remote work. Companies that are embracing remote work are crushing it. The more technologically savvy, the more advanced side always wins. And remote work is a representation of a more technologically advanced way of doing things. Whenever you go against technology, you lose.
Welcome to Talking Billions. We talk about big ideas, big inspirations, big topics. We take on the hardest subject of all, money. How to make it, save it, keep it. But our conversations lead us to an even bigger question: what it means to live a rich life beyond money. My guests share their practices, principles, and evergreen wisdom. I'm your host, Bogumil Baranowski, author, TEDx speaker, investor, and a founding partner of Sicard Associates, a boutique investment firm founded in New York City. Join me on this quest to unearth the wisdom of the ages. My guest today is Mitko Karshovsky. He's the host of a very successful podcast, That Remote Life, where he interviews experts in remote work and remote life while sharing strategies and techniques for those interested in pursuing a location-independent career. He was born in Bulgaria, grew up in Ohio. He has traveled the world and lived in many countries. And he currently spends his time between the US, Bulgaria, Thailand, and Mexico, among other places. We talk about the experience of growing up in Eastern Europe and the United States, Mitko's podcast, That Remote Life, becoming a digital nomad, the success and the future of remote-first companies, asynchronous and location-independent work. Please help me welcome Mitko Karshovsky. Hello, Mitko. Thank you for joining me today.
Hey, Bogey. How you doing? Thanks so much for having me.
I'm doing great. I've been looking forward to this. You and I share a passion for travel and remote work. We have friends in common scattered around the globe, and our dear Chase Warrington from About Abroad connected us. And I'm a big fan of your podcast, That Remote Life. So let's jump right in. Given that I work in the investment profession, I get asked what it means and what it takes to be rich. And there's no easy answer. In my mind, you are yet another friend who discovered a way to live a rich life beyond any monetary metrics, a life on your own terms. Tell us more.
That's a really hard question to answer because it's something that I struggle with a lot as well in terms of like, what does it mean to have a rich life? For me, a rich life is growing up in Eastern Europe. I definitely remember not having enough. And as a young immigrant family, financial stress was definitely something that I grew up with. And it's just something that I never wanted to have in my life anymore. So I would definitely say that for me personally, financial safety is very important. And it doesn't mean having to have millions of dollars. It just means not having to worry about those like daily costs. But to me, that seems like it's sad because it's such a low level. So I just don't even want to have it on my mind. I don't want it to be something that I spend energy on. So that's definitely something important. And then the other part of having a rich life to me is obviously being somewhere that I enjoy being. So that's the part of the location independence. I want to be in a place where I can do a lot of outdoor activities and get a lot of sun and just enjoy day-to-day life. But also, I've always said, like, working on cool projects with cool people, that is the most important thing, is that it energizes me the most. And being in a financial position to be able to either not necessarily have to care about money so that I can work on those cool projects with cool people, even if I'm not sure how they're going to be financially beneficial at the moment, and to make sure that I don't get dragged into projects that I don't have energy or passion for because of the money. I don't have a specific answer of A, B, C, D. But those are the sort of topics I think about when I'm asked, like, about what does a rich life mean to me?
I love it. You touched on it a little bit, but let's dive in a little deeper. I'm thinking about your childhood and upbringing that you mentioned and your relationship with travel and lifestyle. Can you elaborate a little bit more how that had an influence in you?
Yeah, it had a lot of influence because I even sometimes say that I was destined to become a digital nomad. Because I was born in Bulgaria, so I grew up in Bulgaria until I was 10 years old. And then my family immigrated to the United States. And when you immigrate at 10, you already have some cultural download, right? Because of that, when I moved to the United States, it was really tough because it was a completely different culture. I should say, I think it's also different when you immigrate when you're an adult, because then at that point, your personality is established. I was in this midpoint. And what happened because of that as a result was that everywhere I went in the United States, I was the Bulgarian kid, and my name being very Bulgarian didn't help. And then when I would go back to Bulgaria, everyone knew me as the American kid. What is going on? Why can't I just be at home somewhere? And at the same time, because I had grown up in Bulgaria and I knew that there was another way of living, I just couldn't imagine a life in which I was just going to live in the United States in my 100 square mile radius of my house. And when I heard the term digital nomad in 2015, I think, that's why I call it a Pandora's box moment, because it was like this thing that I had always been looking for. And like, I didn't really know what that would look like in real life. And then I heard the term and I Googled it, and oh my God, there's tons of people living this way. And I'm not crazy. There is a community of people who do this. And obviously since then, a lot of things have changed, and we can talk about that in terms of like how that movement has matured, you know, due to COVID and everything like that. But that's why for me, I saw that this is it. And I told my girlfriend, now wife, I told her, I was like, hey, this is something that I want to do, and this is something that's important to me. And she thought I was like crazy. She's like, people can't do this. And she always jokes that in an attempt to shut me up, she actually applied for a job on Upwork and got her first client that way. And then the light bulb went off for her as well. And so ever since then, we've been nomadic. But yeah, it definitely was something that almost feels like, looking back, I in some ways was destined to do this, or it was obvious decision for me, even though in the moment, you know how it is. Of course, this is how this progresses. But then when you're in the moment, it can seem pretty chaotic.
It's interesting what you said, because I moved to the US as an adult, and New York City was my first stop. And I remember this specific moment. I went to a bookstore and there was a whole section about retiring in exotic locations. And it was a bit of a culture shock to me, because I was completely unaware of this idea that you could pick up and go and retire somewhere that's not your home. My grandparents lived where they worked and they lived their entire life. Once they retired, there was no difference. But the idea that you could move to an exotic place, and I think some of the names were Mexico and Costa Rica and Belize. And I was just fascinated with the idea. And then I thought, well, why wait for that kind of experience until retirement? Why not do it earlier? But it was one of the little things that I discovered that I wasn't aware of before coming to America, among other things, but that really stuck with me. Mm-hmm. So many new terms we're talking about: remote work, digital nomad, location independent, work from home, work from anywhere. What's what, and how do we navigate this new territory as employees and business owners, given that you're the expert, you're deep in the topic?
There's a lot of synonyms, and then there's a lot of this, I don't remember if in math class, I'm about to embarrass myself possibly, but there's this idea of, what is it? A rectangle is a square, but a square is not a rectangle kind of thing, or vice versa, whichever one it is.
Right.
I think there's a little bit of that, right? A digital nomad is a remote worker, but a remote worker is not necessarily a digital nomad. So a digital nomad is someone who works remotely and makes money remotely, just digitally, but also chooses to not have a home base and may move around. Now, I'm not a stickler for how often you move around. This is where the digital nomad to slowmad kind of distinction is for some people, where a digital nomad is someone who moves more often, while a slowmad is someone who takes their time moving slowly, right? You're moving around, whether it's every year or every month, it doesn't really matter. I still think you still have the same mindset. You're not taking those extra steps that an expat would. That's like another categorization of someone who sets up shop in another country. Another term is someone who is remote, but can then also work asynchronously, and that has more freedom around their, not necessarily asynchronous, but has freedom around their location. Because you can be a remote worker, but based on your company agreement, you may have to come into the office once a week or whatever, in which case you're not location independent, because you're still tied to that geographic location, even if it's a smaller or a weaker tie. You're still tied to it. So someone who's location independent has the ability to be a digital nomad.
Well, I think what all of these terms have in common is choice and freedom, which means mm-hmm. you don't have to report to an office. And speaking of an office, when we became independent as a firm, Secret Associates, initially a lot of time and effort and money went into securing an office, because that felt like that's the most essential thing we need. We need a place to meet and work. And I think if we were doing it all over again, I don't think the office would be the number one thing that we would be thinking about. And a lot of startups that I talk to and friends in younger companies, the office needs are not the number one thing on their list. But it used to be for so long. I think something has changed in that sense.
Yeah, I think for a really long time as well, it was a sign of professionalism. I actually think that we haven't needed an office for a while.
I think the mindset is changing very quickly, though.
I agree.
So let's talk about your podcast, That Remote Life. You sit down and you chat with many digital nomads, remote workers around the world. What are some of the life design ideas and inspirations that you could share that you learned?
There's no shortage of different ways of doing it. And you're right. I think one of the things that I've talked a little bit about publicly is this idea that remote work, what remote work really does is changes or restructures the equation of what work means. Because if you think about the way that work existed up until now, it essentially controlled your life. You lived where your job was. Your schedule was completely based around when you go into the office or your work or whatever it is. You dictate, like, everything essentially revolved around the gravitational pull of your job. You saw your family when you weren't at work. It dictated when you got up and when you had breakfast and when you exercised and when all those things based around, like, when you were supposed to be at work. Remote work flips that script. So it changes it from living to work to working to live. And it allows you to really say, okay, I'm going to make my money remotely. And then now, and especially if you can do it in an asynchronous way, which more and more companies are figuring that out, then you really get more control over your time, even if you're not entrepreneurial. That was the big draw with entrepreneurs, is that at the end of the day, you could hopefully have more control over how you spent your time. I think that the benefit of that is now entering more and more like the general workforce, which is really exciting. But because of that, now we have so many people designing a life that is unique to them because of remote work or powered by remote work. You have digital nomads that are traveling internationally. You have expats who are moving to a different country because they just like that country better. Maybe they're married to someone from that country and they're moving there. So they're maybe not traveling. They're living in another country while they keep their same job in from wherever they are.
Sounds like more options and more choices and leveling the playing field when you really think about it. I moved to New York for a certain career and certain job, and to think today that these kinds of jobs would be available even if somebody's not physically present in a major city, I think it really changes the dynamic on so many levels, and it's hard to even grasp in what ways it's affecting both employees and employers. And I think some companies have a hard time embracing it. And that leads me to the next question. And most of what we talk about, in many ways, it's evergreen. I think anybody can pick it up and hear it, you know, 5 years from now. But this particular question I have in mind dates us here a little bit. So we're after the pandemic experiment, and a lot of people tried remote work, more people than ever before. And I've seen some staggering statistics that basically say that everybody that could have tried it, tried it. But I have a feeling that in this particular moment, late 2022, remote work is becoming a taboo again. People talk less about it. If they can still work remotely, they keep it very low key. There are a lot of big companies, including tech companies that empowered us in many ways to work remotely, that have become reluctant or even resistant to remote work, and some even don't allow it at all. What are your thoughts? What are we missing? You know, we're all excited about this new idea, but there's still so much resistance.
It's a pendulum swing, right? So before COVID, we were slowly maturing this idea of remote work. I've been a fan of remote work and have been talking about it since 2017, using that terminology. In 2017, 18, 19 is when I started the podcast. So I more formally started creating content on that topic. But even back in the 2017, 18, you had books being written by the folks from Basecamp all about remote and rework all around this concept of you can work this way. The operating procedures of a remote asynchronous company were starting to be developed, but they weren't ready. They weren't mature yet. And so what happened was, because COVID happened, there was something for these companies to land on in terms of, hey, people have been working remotely, you can do this. But what I saw during that transition was, first of all, a lot of people having negative experiences with remote work because of the lockdown. So people started equating working remotely with working in your house and not being able to leave anywhere, which drove me crazy. So I can't imagine how crazy it drove people who had never experienced it before. And I told people during that experience, this isn't remote work. This is a pandemic in which you're being forced to work remotely. None of the benefits of remote work are currently here. This just sucks for everyone, right? Because the benefit of being able to work remotely is for you to be able to do some email in the morning for an hour from home, then go to a coffee shop, then maybe go to a co-working space. That's the fun of remote work. The really big issue that I saw was that a lot of companies saw it as a temporary inconvenience that they just wanted to ride out. And that's a problem for two reasons. Number one, it's you're not actually investing in the retraining that your employees need in order to function remotely, which is 100% a necessity. And then the other thing that happens is that because you're not investing in that retraining, because you're not actually starting to rethink how to do work, you actually say, remote work can't work. Look, we tried it. It doesn't work. We're going to go back to an office, when in reality, your experiment is faulty because you never actually tried to do remote work. You didn't actually embrace remote work. Companies that are embracing remote work are crushing it. I think that's why you're seeing so many companies pull back, is because A, the employees did not have a good experience because they were shuttered during the quarantine, and because their companies never adopted strong remote work ideas and concepts. So they had a terrible experience working remotely. And because now a lot of these managers and executives feel like they have evidence that remote work doesn't work, when it in fact does, they just simply did not do the things they needed to do in order to get those benefits. There's also this idea of the cat's out of the bag and there's no going back, but I just think it's going to take longer.
Yeah, that's how I feel. And I mentioned it to you before, I spoke at a Digital Nomad Remote Work Conference in 2018. I was a guest of Nacho Rodriguez in Gran Canaria, that you might know. And I came back very inspired by all the talks that I heard and people that I met. And this was still a very early development compared to what happened that followed. And when I came back to New York, a lot of people didn't like the idea and they told me it just can't be done. And the big argument was the paper. And in the investment profession, there's still, at the time at least, there was a lot of paper printed, signed, scanned, mailed around. That's something that I was not a fan of. I wanted to find a way to do it with e-signatures, but it was still very early on. And I date myself here a little bit, but I was visiting the New York Stock Exchange in the early days when I started in New York in 2005. And they had paper tickets. It was the last days of actual paper tickets bought and sold. They were on the floor in the middle of the trading day. So paper was something that I always thought that eventually will go away. The trees that have to be cut down, that's one argument, but also the inconvenience of dealing and storing and shredding and keeping it secure if it has sensitive information. So what happened in 2022, paper was replaced by a lot of different ways to get digital signatures, send documents around in a secure way, and pretty much eliminated the need to print a single page, which I think is hugely liberating for a lot of business models that relied on moving paper around, that we've done for as long as offices have existed. So that's been a very liberating thought. And as you said, the cat is out of the bag here, because a lot of people tried it. And before COVID, it was something that we could do. then it was something we had to do. And we realized that it is possible. And maybe it's a time for everybody to digest, how do we embrace this new idea? And there are a lot of questions, and it's a longer topic, but rules, regulations, taxation, all other things, not even about international travel, but you working for a company that's in a different state in the United States, mm-hmm. triggers a lot of things that everybody should consult their accountant and their company's accountant about. But these are still open questions that have to be addressed. But I think if there is a need, there will be a solution down the road. We're just trying to slowly digest the experience. But I think that, as you said, the cat is out of the bag.
Sometimes it takes pressure to change direction. We've been in a position technologically where remote work is feasible for a while now. Maybe not as easy, but feasible. You could do it. The systems and the technology was there to enable it. And I think COVID forced people to figure that out, because otherwise there's no reason for us to change. And you sort of need that outside pressure sometimes to force you to change. And I think in general, whenever you go against technology, you lose. The more technologically savvy, the more highly advanced technological like side always wins. And remote work is a representation of a more technologically advanced way of doing things. It forces efficiency. And so this is why I say that the cat is out of the bag, because at this point, COVID caused there to be at least one company in every industry has figured out how to succeed remotely. And because that company is now more efficient and gets a bunch of different benefits from remote work that we can talk about if you want to, they're now going to win in those industries. So it's only a matter of time until they start dominating those industries because of those benefits. And the rest of the companies now are, again, forced to adopt that because they say, why can't we outcompete these guys? And it's, oh, because their business is just more efficient and better than ours because of remote work and a bunch of the other things that come along with that. And so that's why the cat is out of the bag, even if there's this pushback right now that we're feeling against remote work. And I don't actually agree that there is a pushback, because some of the data does not show that. It's a very interesting data point from LinkedIn. But that's, I think, why the cat is out of the bag.
I like that. What are your thoughts about the hybrid model, working one day a week in the office? What are your thoughts on that? Are you in favor?
I am actually skeptical. Because I think when you are hybrid, you are not actually getting the benefits of being remote. The benefits for a company being remote are that you, A, have the cost savings of not having an office. And there's multiple, because you're not just paying the rental fee. You're also paying a whole bunch of other costs. The bigger issue is that you're not able to actually hire the best person for that job. You are restricting your hiring to whatever that donut is, whatever that radius around your office is that you can realistically come in once a week. And so the beauty of remote work and having a company that is remote first, that can hire from anywhere, is that you can get the best person for that job possible. Now, a lot of companies right now are reading that as, where can I get cheaper talent to get this job done? I actually think that's not the long-term idea. Remote work allows you to hire that best person, no matter where they are in the world. I think a hybrid can work to an extent if you're remote first. If all of your processes, if all of your operation, if your culture and your communication is remote first, meaning that it's developed with remote in mind, hybrid could work. I could see that. But the issue with it being hybrid, and we're already seeing this with the way that companies try to work remotely, it's not like they like stopped and figured it out. They were going to just use it as a bandage. My guess is, my gut instinct is that companies are not going to be hybrid first and then be remote. Who are the people that we've seen resisting remote work? It's the managers and the executives. The workers and the employees are the ones that want it the most. I'm sure there are going to be examples of companies that are remote first and then that just decide to have an office and allow people to come in when they want to. I'm sure there's going to be companies that are successful with that, but I think 95% of them, it's going to be a disaster.
I gave a TEDx talk 4 years ago about investing. And after the talk, this young student came up to me and he said that his biggest fear is getting stuck in a cubicle. And at the time, he had not had an office job yet. He was about to enter the real world, so to speak, and look for a job. But the cubicle was his biggest fear. And I hope if he's listening to this today, he has more options to consider. And that fear is not as real as it was to him 4 years ago. So, and I already told him at the time that there are remote workers, digital nomads, but they were so few out there. So today it's something that's much more acceptable. And I hope he's in a good place now, enjoying a nice view from wherever he's working and living his best life. I'm thinking about time as the most precious asset that we have. We talked about rich life, but your vision for that remote life is a lot about how we spend our time. You can travel, you can spend the time that you have with your loved ones while you stay active and productive, of course, but all of that without the dreaded daily commute. Tell me more.
Work to live as opposed to living to work. I think it just unlocks your ability to spend your time how you want to spend it. One of the things, so my parents are far more, I'd say, naturally open, or maybe because they grew up with a crazy kid like me, but my wife's parents are far more conservative. And so when we told them that we were going to be digital nomads and we were going to travel and do all this kind of stuff, they were skeptical before COVID, obviously. They thought we were going to be broke backpackers for the rest of our life. But it really clicked for them when we were able to go visit them and stay with them for 2 or 3 weeks right around Christmas, when all of their friends as kids came in day before Christmas and left 2 days after. And all of a sudden for them, it clicked. Oh, you being able to work remotely and travel means that sometimes you're going to travel here and be able to spend more time with us, and actually we're going to get to see you guys more. And obviously they've seen our careers grow and that kind of stuff. Spend your time however you want to. And then the remote job allows you to essentially do that. You want to learn how to surf? Great. Go to Mexico. Keep working your job. Just go to Mexico where you can spend 2 weeks surfing when you're not working. Get your job done and then go surf. You figure that out. Now you want to go learn how to snowboard? Go to Colorado and spend 2 weeks. You can kind of do that way more. My friend Dan Andrews, who's the host of the Tropical MBA podcast, said to me once, I became an entrepreneur because it was the only way for me to feel like I had control over this idea of time. And what he said was, if there were the job opportunities that are available today, if they were available back when I was getting started, I may have never started a business. I may have just gone out there and gotten a really good remote job, because you would get a lot of that benefit in terms of a good salary, location independence, and you know, you don't have to worry about the negatives that come with having a business, which there's obviously negatives and stress and anxiety and all those things. I might have just done that and never really started a business. I think the beauty of that is there's entrepreneurial personalities, even though it's very in vogue and very sexy, are few and far between. And this allows a lot of people who are not naturally entrepreneurial to also get those benefits that were before reserved for someone who had a business.
I like that. A lot of flexibility that wasn't available to us before. I'm thinking about life's biggest regrets. They repeat, and there are two main ones. I wish I had not worked this much. And the second one was, I wish I traveled more. And you seem to have found a formula to address both.
If you're concerned about those, go and get a remote job with a good company. It literally just checks both of those, where, yeah, you're going to have to work, but you're not going to have to pull in the 10, 12-hour days that are so common for a lot of people that are trying to build a business. And you're going to be able to travel because you're working remotely. So just be selective about the company that you want to work for. Make sure that it's a company that is remote first, that not just is okay with remote work, but embraces it and it's part of their culture, because that checks both of those boxes.
So if you could start your remote adventure all over again, knowing what you know, what would you do differently today?
I would not rush into it as quickly. I wouldn't jump into it the way that I did before, because it's a good question. I think the future of work is in fractionalized careers. We are seeing the shrinkage of businesses and of companies because of automation, because of outsourcing. Essentially, companies need far fewer people to get the job done. And because of that, I think it's really important to learn those core skills and be be open to the idea that you're not going to have one career in your life, but that you're going to have multiple careers, and finding the community of people, finding the industry that really gets you interested and that you don't mind spending the next 30 years working in, even if that work happens in several different versions. I think we're going to see more and more people in our generation have multiple careers. And the only way to make that sustainable is to make sure you're not starting from zero every single time you switch that career, which means that you need to figure out within which industry you want to exist and have those career changes happen, because then you're not starting from zero all the time. If you are entrepreneurial, which I am, so my mind is always going into that way, then start developing businesses within that industry. That's what I would do. I also wouldn't travel as fast. When I got started, I was moving every 2 weeks, and I don't think that's sustainable. I would definitely do, at the moment, I like to move every 4 months. To me, I find is an ideal time. Those are some of the tips.
No, I love it. So what's your definition of success? Do you have a number of countries you want to visit or live in, or is it something completely different?
I actually not want to visit every country in the world. I think that's, I'm going to ruffle some feathers. A lot of people I've met who are trying to go for every country want to visit that country because it's country 119 or whatever, not because I really want to go to wherever. Mark Manson has this really great idea of the diminishing rate of return of travel. So essentially, the more countries that you go to, the less impact that country has on you. The first time that you leave the country and you go and you experience a different culture, it completely blows your mind. You realize that there's people that live in a completely different way than you. They do everything differently from you. And the other realization that I love is people realize that even if you live in a different way, you can still be happy. Especially in the United States, where a lot of people haven't left the country, when they go to another place, it completely shatters their understanding of reality. And so that's really impactful. And then country number 2 and 3 are going to be really impactful as well. By the time that you get to like 10, it's not going to be as impactful. You're going to have to work way harder to create just as much impact. You're going to have to go to way more uncomfortable places to get that amount of impact again. And so the more countries that you go to, the less return on that investment you have. And that really resonates with me because there's a point at which I started feeling that way, like it was just another country. And now I really spend a lot more time, at least in terms of travel, like going to places that like there's a community or a place. I really going back to places because I get to explore them longer. I like to form connections with the people there, maybe do business in that location. There's something we can build together in this area. So for me, and I don't mean to offend anyone by saying that, I think that going for the travel to every single country in the world, while it's a really difficult thing and being able to figure out doing it and actually pushing through the challenge and the goal of that, I think is really cool. I just don't think that you should look at, I've been to 80 countries. And so because of that, I don't know. To me, that has no connection to success in any way, shape or form.
Enjoying the journey.
It's a game. And I think, you know, life sometimes being like a sandbox, you know, you can build those in like one corner and just hang out there and, you know, not really explore the rest of the sandcastle or the sandbox. And for me, like, that's kind of how I'm at. It's like, I want to be in a position where I can build projects with like lots of different people and work on things. And like, maybe 8 of them aren't going to do anything. They're not going to be successful, but maybe 2 of them will. Right. And that's how I view it. And for me,
I love it. Do you have any book or podcast recommendations for the listeners?
The Tropical MBA podcast, I think, is really great. Chase's podcast about abroad, I think, is amazing in terms of exploring like alternative ways of life and people who have been expats and have moved abroad. I really like, recently, I've been really digging My First Million. I don't know if you've listened to them, but that's a really good podcast because they just explore ideas of different businesses, which I think leans completely into my, I just want to build cool stuff. If you want to hear more about this topic, also like my podcast, we're reaching 200 episodes here. So we've been around for a little bit and explore this entire world and talk about a lot of different areas of it, from business to lifestyle, to all that kind of stuff, technology. Books. The book that I've gifted the most is The Almanac of Naval Ravikant. And I think it's one of the most impactful books of the last 5 years. Eric Jorgensen, the author, has been on the podcast, and it's just one of those books that I think everyone has to read.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I keep going back to it. I feel like it's one of those books that's hard to read once and take it all in. I feel like it's so dense. It takes a little bit of time, but very thoughtful.
And it takes time, and it takes like you thinking about it and sitting with it and then rereading it again and saying, okay, this now makes a little bit more sense. And there's a lot of like great lessons in that book. And also, I might be wrong about this and I might have dreamt it, but I'm pretty sure Eric is working on another book with Balaji, which is going to be called The Almanac of Balaji, which I think is going to be also really great. I still haven't gone through Balaji's book, The Network State. I think that's what it's called, The Network State. But I bet it's just as, I'm sure that's going to be another one. Yeah, The Network State. I've only read like sections of it, but I think I get the gist of where he's going with it. And I know I've read some of his other ideas that went into that book. So that's also a very interesting kind of concept.
I'll look it up. I don't know that one, The Network State.
Perfect. It's basically his idea of how to build a country on the internet, how to start a new country in a country that is like for digital nomads, essentially, and that kind of stuff.
The challenge is that we have to be physically somewhere at the end of the day. And that raises some questions that are beyond this conversation. But I think it's an interesting topic that we are remote and virtual in so many ways. All of us are. We pay our bills without walking to the post office like our grandparents did. So we are. But at the end of the day, we are somewhere, and that creates tax and immigration and other questions that are really interesting and not fully resolved just yet. And as we speak now, there are more digital nomad visas than ever before, and more countries are embracing the idea. But the rules are just being written for things that are already happening, which I think is something that always happens. When the first cars showed up, they didn't know how to handle it. And they were making up rules how to navigate the traffic between horses and cars. It's the same moment. Something happened. How do we embrace it instead of feeling that we have to deal with it? Let's embrace it.
When people ask me, what do you do? When they ask me those really intense questions, I give them the unappealing answer. I want to build the work from anywhere infrastructure. Because like you said, something happened and now we're trying to write the laws for it. And at the same time, there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be created in order to make this thing that's more long-lasting. And I love building projects in that sphere of that infrastructure like you talked about. So there's a lot of, if anyone's listening to this that wants to work on an exciting field, I think there's so many problems to be solved and so much stuff to still be created in this space.
Well, everybody that wants to work and has that option to work remotely will have to think about it. And every employer that wants to find employees will have to think about it. So I'm very curious where this goes. Mitko, this was incredible. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I appreciate it.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
The content of this podcast is for general informational purposes only, and so are the opinions of members of Seekard Associates, a registered investment advisor, and guests of the show. This podcast does not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any specific security or financial instruments or provide investment advice or service. Past performance is not indicative of future results. More information on Seekard Associates is available in its Form ADV disclosure documents available at advisorinfo.sec.gov. You were listening to Talking Billions. We talk about big ideas, big inspirations, big topics. We take on the hardest subject of all, money. But our conversations lead us to an even bigger question: what it means to live a rich life beyond money. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and follow, subscribe, rate, and share with friends and family. We rely on word of mouth to promote the show. One click for you means the world to us. Thank you. Until next time, your host, Bogumil Baranowski.